case for the morning. My notes tell me that Ripon College students may be here. Are they here? And if they are, would they stand up, please? Oh, wow. Good group.
Ripon good.
Thank you very much. Please be seated. And then also Central Wisconsin Christian High School, if they are here, would those students and their teachers stand? Oh, wonderful. Thank you. You may be seated. The students are here with a program called Court with Class, which this court sponsors in combination with the State Bar. And so they've had materials about the cases that are going to be heard today. And after the second argument this morning, Justice Michael Gableman will come out and speak with you. So if you can come back, he won't talk about the substance of the case, but he's got a lot of pearls about how the court works and operates that I think would be interesting.
Don't overpromise, Chief.
Low expectations.
Well, I stand.
I've got some interesting tidbits about the room, if nothing
else. Yes, I stand by my statement. So, in any case, we've kind of had a little peek at you, and now I'll introduce the court to the students. On my far right, Justice Rebecca Bradley. Next to her, Justice Annette Ziegler. Next to me is Justice Shirley Abrahamson. I am Pat Rogensack, the Chief Justice. On my left, Justice Ann Walsh Bradley. Next to her, Justice Michael Gableman, who's waved at you earlier. And on the far end, Justice Daniel Kelly. So, with those little remarks to start with, I will call the first case, Garza versus American Transmission Company. Counsel, are you ready to begin? Please do.
Madam Chief Justice, it may have pleased the court. Good morning. My name is Brian Cahill of Godfrey. Hearing
You'll
with me
have
today
to
is
speak louder, so well, you're going to have to.
Yeah, if you move the mic up, I think that'll help a lot.
Or raise the podium, too.
Appearing with me today is Catherine Sadler of Godfrey & Kahn.
The marshal is on her way to help you with the podium because the podium actually rises. That will help us because we'll be able to hear you better.
Yeah. This is a beautiful room, but the sound system is not terrific. So we have
Thank
to
you,
speak
Marshall.
Up. And Marshal, if you can start his clock again for him since we've been moving things around. Please, one more time.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Again, I'm Brian Cahill of Godfrey & Kahn. Appearing with me today is Catherine Stadler of Godfrey & Kahn and Jessica Basilio, counsel for American Transmission Company. In this case, ATC asked the court to confirm the property rights that it holds pursuant to a transmission line easement created in 1969. Property rights that its ratepayers should not be compelled to pay for twice.
Counsel, the substance of this matter is a dispute over the easement. The purpose of the easement centers around the maintenance of the area around the subject telephone poles, the poles that hold the wires. Now, the Court of Appeals, it was of great significance to the Court of Appeals that the composition of the poles changed from the original composition in 1969 from wood to now the composition is steel. Besides the fact of the composition, does the record disclose, and if it's outside the record, please don't tell me, does the record disclose whether the poles have changed in other ways as well? I know that one of the reasons behind the poles was in the briefs that now fewer poles are required because the steel is stronger, and so there can be greater distance between poles, therefore fewer are required. But is there something different other than the composition if the record discloses?
The record does speak to that, and the record shows that in addition to a change in the material, there is a difference in height, whereas the wood poles range from 65 feet to 75 feet in height, the steel poles range in height from 80 feet to 100 feet. In the area around the Garza's property, I believe the poles are 90 to 100 feet.
Okay, and the record discloses that at the time Mr. and Mrs. Garza purchased their property, the metal poles were in place.
That's absolutely correct, Your Honor. The poles were constructed around 1995. Mr. and Mrs. Garza purchased their property in 2004.
All right.
Looking at the exhibit before the court, this provides a good orientation and overview of how the transmission line and the transmission line easement relates to the Garza's property. The line in blue, just to orient you, the left side of the page would be north. The right side is south with the Waupaca River down there. We've pointed out where the Garza's house sits. The blue line corresponds to the transmission center line that's defined by meets and bounds in the easement. That transmission center line under the 1969 transmission line would have required about five to six, would have required six poles. Today, that 1995 transmission line requires three poles for that same distance. None of those poles sit in the highway right-of-way adjacent to the Garza's property. That did not used to be the case under the 1969 transmission line, where there was a pole directly in front of their property, between their property and Highway 49. And so this is important because for purposes of the easement grants the right to place two poles. Both of those poles are outside the highway right away and on the portion of the center line, not parallel to Highway 49, but where it turns to the west, quite some distance from the Garza's property. And while the easement grants the right to two poles, the record shows that today there is only one pole in that area. And it is that one pole on which the Garza's argument hinges. A pole that is approximately a fifth of a mile from their property, a pole that is not likely even within eyesight of their property, given the houses, trees, and roads that intervene between their property and that pole.
Well, you know, the amicus brief of the Utilities Association either says directly or strongly hints. Where's their standing to object to wooden versus steel, height, which I don't think that's the objection, height, or even the fact that it's now two circuits rather than one, when the poles are not even on their property, or as you would saying, is near their property. Their only issue is vegetation. And their easement is clear that their property is subject to cutting down for vegetation. So why are they in this lawsuit? It's not their fight. I mean, that's what the argument is.
And, Your Honor, that's our first argument, is that, look, these poles are off their property. They don't have a right to object. And the rights that ATC seeks to exercise on their property, cutting trees, are the same regardless of whether that pole is steel or wood. And the Court of Appeals said, look, they don't have standing. Same is true here. They don't have the opportunity to object to poles that are steel that aren't on their property.
They bought property subject to the transmission company, well, its successor here, the transmission company, saying cutting down what they need in order to clear their lines. So doesn't matter.
I think that's absolutely right. And that's consistent with the case law in this state. Cases like the Court of Appeals decision in Gallagher, which recognized that an easement for transmission lines, by implication, grants the right to do that which is necessary to keep the line free from interference from trees.
Yeah, but you don't even have to rely on that. Doesn't they say expressly they can trim the trees?
Absolutely. In this case, the easement expressly provides that right. And where the Court of Appeals went awry was by tying it to the composition of the poles.
And the composition of the poles does not increase the burden on the subservient estate here, which is what the Garza owns.
That is correct. The rights to cut trees are the same regardless.
Can we talk a little bit more about the burden on the subservient estate? Is it true, in a, just as I'm thinking through this, it seems that the burden has lessened now that you have steel poles instead of wooden poles in terms of the amount you need to cut back by the commission, the frequency, and so on. Is it higher or lower?
I would agree with your inclination that the burden is less, and for a couple of reasons. One, there's no longer a property, or there's no longer a pole immediately adjacent to their property. It's now some distance to the north. Two, with steel poles, the need to, probably the most intrusive act under the easement, to replace the poles is going to occur less frequently. So the burden is going to be less.
All right, let's continue along that analysis for just a moment then. Let's say for the, that we were to agree that that the use of the easement is greater now than it was with wood poles, and ATC had to either negotiate or condemn additional access rights. What would be the difference, if any, in the value of the Servient property under the use of steel poles as opposed to wood poles?
I believe that there would be no difference, because if you were to look at the easement, what you would have is you don't have a right to place poles on the Garza's property. So the easement wouldn't grant that right. The only rights that would be granted would be the right to cut trees and vegetation on their property, along with the other access rights granted by the easement. So there'd be no...
Which currently exist under the current easement.
Which currently exist, and therefore no change in value. So if we're wrong, we end up sort of going through a hollow proceeding where they get nothing additional. That's also important because when they bought the property, those steel poles were there. That easement was there. They were aware of both those facts when they purchased the property.
The record also discloses that the easement itself was disclosed to the purchasers and recorded at the same time as all the other recording documents and sale instruments, correct?
That is correct. The Garzas received a copy of the easement, and also in their title report, the easement was disclosed.
Counsel, can you talk to me a little bit about 182.017? I'm a little bit sympathetic to the argument that those big steel poles are not the same as a wood pole. And high-powered transmission lines aren't the same as the ones for which the easement was given. What, if any, impact does 182.017 have on this case?
In this case,
yes.
Given what this easement granted in 1969...
And just in case I get interrupted somewhere along the line, this case, but then... How would 182.017 impact other landowners who would then have steel poles on their property?
In this case, 182.017 does not apply. 182.017 contemplates and requires that for any conveyance of a transmission line easement that is in excess of 100 kilovolts, more than 1 mile in length, the easement must have certain terms in it. The reason that doesn't apply here is that the 1969 easement was sufficient to grant the rights to the steel pole transmission line that resides on the property now. And it's also important to note that 182.017, while it has certain requirements such as the height of the poles, the type of the poles, the distance of the lines above the land, doesn't require the easement to specify the material of the poles. And so for the Garza, 182.017, which was enacted and effective in 1975, 6 years after their easement was created, does not have any effect.
Does it say it doesn't affect? Does the statute say it's not retroactive and doesn't affect prior easements?
There's nothing in the statute, there's nothing in the legislative intent that suggests that it was intended to be retroactive. By its terms, it applies to conveyances. which would be necessarily prospective.
Okay, for steel poles that go on property then from 1975 on, what happens? How's the property owner treated? Not this property owner, because these were from 1969. I understand your argument. Now I'm asking you, how is the practical effect does 182.017 treat?
Sure. I think I understand your question. Is assuming that, in this case, Wisconsin Public Service Corporation had been required to obtain a new easement in 1995 when they rebuilt the line, what would 182.017 require?
Or just some other property owner who's going to have these high-voltage transmission lines placed on their property. How is that landowner treated?
Let's assume that the 69 easement was in 1979.
What I'm trying to do, to be clear, is compare this kind of easement that existed in 1969 to an easement that today might happen on a brand new parcel with a new line and new poles and steel high transmission.
So
damages and whatnot.
Understood. That statute would require the utility to insert into the easement specific physical characteristics of the easement and the transmission line poles. And if we look at 7A, it tells us exactly what needs to be in that easement. It needs to specify the length of the easement over the landowner's land. It needs to specify the width of that easement. It needs to identify the number of structures, the type of those structures, be they poles, H-frames, towers, large four-post base, and the maximum height of those structures on the landowner's property. Finally, it must also specify the number of conductors, wires, and the height of those above the landscape. Now, those terms are required under the statute, but nothing prevented those terms from having been included in the 1969 easement. They are not there, and because they're not there, the 1995 transmission line falls within the scope of that easement.
Council argument. That's the issue. Does it or doesn't it?
Right. That's the second grounds on which this court can reverse the Court of Appeals. The first, as you identified, is, hey, cutting rights are independent. Second is, this easement authorizes the current transmission line at steel poles.
And may you have to look at the language of the easement itself, right? Isn't this a plain text interpretation?
As with any contract or property deed, that is correct, Your
Honor. 182.017 also defines what the company can do regarding tree trimming under sub 5, and it provides for damages, right?
That is correct.
Okay. Talk to me a little bit about that, and then go ahead and move on to whatever you want.
So how it works with modern easements is that the text of 182.017 is included in and set forth in those easements, at least the easements that ATC obtains, so that those rights are all included as part of the easement unless the landowner waives them.
And they're not in this one?
They are not in this one. No, as I said, the easement predates the statute.
Okay. Council, you were referencing the second point, that is scope. And that's what the Court of Appeals hung its hat on. It said the issue before us is one of the scope of the easement. It looked at the easement. It says a line comprising wood pole structures. The easement subsequently makes reference to said line or said transmission line. And the Court of Appeals, kind of in a very easy manner, said, now it's steel, outside the scope, end of story. Plain language. Respond to that, if you will. I mean, it does say, as the Court of Appeals indicates, wood pole structures. Why aren't steel structures outside the scope?
This court has consistently taught that a plain language interpretation must also include the purpose that's evident from a document and the context of that document. And here, one of the things that the Court of Appeals misunderstood was the purpose of the easement. The Court of Appeals said the purpose of this easement is to construct wood pole structures. Not a word about transmission of electricity. Under the Court of Appeals interpretation of this purpose, you could put in zip lining structures on wood with lines between them to move people along. That's not what the purpose of this easement is. The title makes evident it's a transmission line easement. Its purpose is for transmitting electricity. So that's the first point, is you have to look at the purpose. The second is the context of the easement as a whole. And in this case, in addition to those three words, wood pole structures, the context shows us two things. One, in that very same paragraph, the easement grants the easement holder the right to change from time to time the kind of transmission line there. What components are there?
What are components? I didn't understand that language.
The entire structure, whether it is the poles, towers, the wires between them, if there needs to be a wire or brace because of how the physics of the line are, all of that.
Everything. So your position is that the American Transmission Company can change everything, from the pole to any attachments or appurtenance thereto.
Yes, Your Honor, that is correct. And it's based on that first paragraph of the statute and also down the third paragraph of that statute, which grants the easement holder the unqualified right to change and replace the transmission line.
There are no limits, zero limits. They can put any kind of transmission line in there that they want, no matter how big or how intrusive. They can do whatever they want because it says it's transmitting electricity?
There are, of course, limits. And the first limit is the purpose. The second limit is that they're confined to an 80-foot right-of-way. That is actually relatively narrow. And so you cannot put a tremendously large line within there. So they're constrained by that.
Well, wouldn't they be constrained also if they increase the burden on the subservient state a lot? I don't know how, but I mean, let's assume it. Let's assume they put in something that made a lot of noise.
Yes. Under the line of cases that recognizes that an easement holder has the right to change the use to reflect modern technologies, a burden analysis does come into the equation.
Right. And your view is this is minor technology.
That is correct, Your Honor.
Counsel, what were the options in 1969 for the structures? It says wood pole structures. Were steel structures an option at the time?
At that time, first off, the record isn't clear on that. But I think there would be no dispute that if you think of the steel lattice structures, which have the four poles at the base and many interconnecting steel parts between it, that was certainly there. Another option would be wood pole H-frames, so two poles with cross beams between them.
Is there anything about this language that would preclude that form of structure?
The tower?
The cross poles that you just mentioned.
No, because it provides for pole structures, I think that the H-frames would encompass it. If you are to conclude that wood pole structures is limiting in some fashion, the limitation probably is it prevents the use of those towers with the wide base, the four posts. I mean, that was probably the most likely alternative to these wood poles.
All right. Is there, in 1969, was there a way of putting a high voltage circuit on a wood pole structure?
Yes, Your Honor.
Was there a capability of putting two circuits on a wood pole structure?
Yes, Your Honor.
So stating wood pole structures in the easement wouldn't preclude either a high voltage circuit or two circuits. Is that correct?
That is correct. And we pointed to decisions from the Public Service Commission where they authorized the utility to put two circuits on wood poles. In one case, it was a 69 and 138 kilovolt circuits, which is what's on the Garza's property. And in another case, it was two 138 kilovolt circuits.
Okay. So now help me with the structure of the form used for this easement. So as I look at that, in the form language lacks only one thing, the form of the structure that's going to be built. Why is it that that is left blank so that that's filled in independently of all of the other components that go into an electric transmission line?
Both that and the distance for tree cutting rights are filled in after the fact. And that's put in there to describe what that transmission line will be when it's first constructed.
All right. So the reason that that's blank is so that the transmission company has to put in there what kind of structure is going to be used.
That's right. Subject to the rights and the rest of the easement to change and replace those structures.
With respect to prescriptive rights, one of your alternative arguments, what manner of use do you need to establish to obtain the prescriptive rights to clear vegetation on the Garza's property?
There are three ways to think about the prescriptive rights in this case. The first is the case S.S. Kresge and Lindokin. And there they talk about prescriptive rights stack on top of the express rights of an easement. And so the prescriptive rights in that scenario are the rights, not on highway right-of-way, but on private property, to have steel poles. So there's prescriptive rights in those steel poles. Because they stack on top of the express easement, they essentially modify the terms there. And so you have, as a result, under the easement, the ability to cut trees and vegetation on the Garza's property. And that is then paired with, is stacked on top of the steel poles.
Well, let's say that if we were to conclude that changing from wood pole structures to steel structures invalidated the easement, and your position was, well, we still have prescriptive rights, is that by virtue of simply having an electric transmission line traveling that path, or is it based on a long history years or more of clearing vegetation within that easement?
It is based on the transmission line occupying the right-of-way and the adjacent land for 10 years. And as part of that, an implication, a necessary right, is the right to cut whatever trees might interfere with that line. So one of the things the Court of Appeals did, they said, well, we need a remand for a determination of prescriptive rights. That's true if you're looking at what tree cutting rights were exercised over a 10-year period. That's not the case if you conclude that the prescriptive rights stack, or if you conclude that, yeah, tree cutting rights, the width of the 40 feet that's set in this easement, are necessary to those the prescriptive rights in that line.
Thank you, Council.
Well, that's only one of the examples you gave for the prescriptive right argument. So I would like you to give the other two in response to Mr. Kelly's argument.
You can do it in rebuttal. Thank you. Council?
Thank you, Madam Chief
Justice. Is that comfortable for you? Is the podium comfortable?
There's a little bit of a height issue.
Yeah, would you help him a little bit? We can adjust it both ways.
On the right-hand side, yeah.
Kind of
toward
and our
the
marshal
middle
is coming.
Underneath. Got it?
Yeah. Fix it so it works for you. That's the deal.
Thank you.
Better? Okay.
Good morning, Madam Chief Justice. I'm Frank Jablonski. I'm here representing the Garzas. I've got Rick and Julie Garza here with me this morning. Thank you very much. If it pleases the court, I would like to first address a couple of arguments that have not been addressed at all in the reply brief to our brief, and both of those arguments, I believe, are dispositive. And then I would like to respond to some things that were said. One of the arguments that is dispositive has to do with whether this easement ever touched the Garza property. The Garza property, Lot 1 of Woodland Estates, was created in 1977. It was created by a plat. One of the requirements of the plat is that it shows all encumbering easements.
Counsel, that's an argument to the subdivider, isn't it? Why is that relevant to this question?
I'm sorry, Honor, I didn't hear you.
The platting process is relevant to the subdivider. Why is that? Why does that affect the validity of the 1969 easement?
It looks like that what the subdivider did was they organized the subdivision such that there would be no easements on any of those properties. If you look back to the history of the case, Jerome Hertig and Betty's wife, they didn't want the transmission line to come through their property at all. First, it was going to come at an angle. It was going to come.
But it does, though, right? I mean, the easement line for the transmission line is described by meets and bounds. We don't really have any question about where that center line is, do we?
Yes, Your Honor. If you look at the easement itself, it says, I'm just going to read a couple of points. It says approximately 69, one measure is taken from approximately 690 feet west of the northeast corner of the southeast one quarter. The next measurement is actually overwritten by hand, and you can't tell what the overwrite says. It says east approximately 823. That's crossed out. Then it says, looks like it says 715. Could also be 795, or it could be 745 feet. The word approximately, again, appear in that easement. So we don't know what the center line of the 1969 set of lines and poles was.
Are you saying that we're supposed to resolve a factual dispute here?
If this were to go back, yes, there would be a factual dispute.
Where does the state of the record show right now with respect to where the center line is? Has that been concluded?
The center line was measured taking the existing set of what lines and poles. So it's actually ATC indicated to Mr. Garza. It's in Mr. Garza repeated it in allegation 19 of his affidavit, which is on. I don't want to look for it, but it's in there. Basically, what they said is they. The easement right-of-way is defined by the central line of the poles. It goes 40 foot this direction, 40 foot the other direction. And so what they did is they took the line of poles that were constructed pursuant to the 1994 Public Service Commission decision, and they measured 40 feet from that. That's how they got the thing on the Garza's land.
All right.
If you go back to when it was platted, the plat, which is supposed to show all easements, does not show any transmission line easement.
Okay, so that might be relevant if this gets back to the trial court and they have to resolve as a factual matter where the center line actually is. But as far as our business today, don't we have to assume that the Garza's property is burdened by the easement?
No, you don't. It's an issue that was not reached by the Court of Appeals. So if you're reviewing so it was not reached by the Court of Appeals. And I don't think it was specifically addressed by the lower court.
Right, but we can't rule in your favor by concluding that the easement's not on your property, can we?
Well, I think that you can, Your Honor. I think that you can because of the legal effect of a plat. In the Geisel's case, which we quoted, this court said that you can rely on a plat for the location of a transmission line. And I think that the related correlate to that is that you can rely on a plat, which is required to show all transmission line encumbrances and all encumbrances.
So is it your position that a subdivider can extinguish an easement simply by failing to record it?
No. My position is that it was required to be shown on this plat if it existed on this plat by law in 1997 when the plat was certified and recorded.
Right. The subdivider creates the plat.
The surveyor.
Okay. So if the subdivider and his surveyor mess up the survey and fail to note the easement, are you saying that that easement then gets extinguished?
No, no, no.
All right, so why does the plat matter here?
The plat matters because it shows the factual, circumstances which had to be certified in 1977 as accurate by a professional who recorded that plat. And this court has said that you can rely on plats for location of easements. And if you can rely on them for location of easements, if you can rely on a plat for location of easements, then it seems like you can rely on a plat for the non-existence of an easement, because the plat is required, in addition to showing where they are, to show whether they exist.
Okay, I don't want to beat a dead horse or anything, but I'm missing something. So you're telling me that if it's not on the plat, that it's not enforceable.
That's
but, but at the same time, you're telling me that it doesn't extinguish the easement, which is, it has to be one or the other, right?
Well, I think that that gets squared up by realizing that this line of poles and wires, we don't know where the poles and wires were in 1969. They could have organized the plat such that for the 40-foot buffer on the opposite side of that line of poles and wires was outside the platted area, so that then they don't have to deal with the transmission line easement.
But that easement provided notice regarding the trimming, not just of that one line that was at the north end, I think, of the property. It provided notice of trimming regarding the other transmission line that went down the side of the property, right?
It's one easement. It was a bigger property before because it wasn't subdivided.
That
so
I understand.
So it comes this way, and then it comes this way.
Okay.
So the poles are up here, the garages are over here, and over here is the highway.
Understood.
Highway 49.
And the line at issue is the one that is sort of adjacent to the Garza's property.
That portion of, it's the same line, but it's that portion of the line.
It kind of makes a right angle.
Yes.
It serves as an elbow, right?
Right-ish. Yes, Your Honor.
Are you, in essence, arguing that this case, our review is improvidently granted? You are asserting that the easement didn't even touch the Garza's property.
There was a factual issue that we've raised from the beginning that kind of just got bypassed, and the Court of Appeals didn't need to look at it.
Mm-hmm.
They just said we're setting, and I don't think that they sent it back for further litigation of the prescriptive easement. I don't read it that way at all. But what they didn't need to reach it. They just,
sure.
as you pointed out, you know, wood, it's not wood. It's supposed to be in the easement. It's not a prescriptive easement. It's defined terms. This is the custom term.
What's your position, given that you're asserting that the case may not even be, the issue may not even be before us because you assert the easement didn't touch the Garza property? Generally, this court does not issue advisory opinions. Are you advocating that we address the issues that you have briefed and argued here today?
I would very much like you to address those issues, and I think that the landowners and the utility companies in the state need those issues to be addressed. That takes us actually to the second issue.
No, I'm not done with that for a moment.
I'm sorry,
Your
Honor.
Did you raise this issue in your brief?
We raised the issue, yes.
Where?
So are you, just while you're looking for it, are you abandoning the argument that the easement is no longer applicable because these are steel lines instead of wood?
No, Your Honor, I'm not abandoning that at all.
I
have multiple.
Okay. So the easement applies.
Right. But the easement
doesn't apply because it can't apply to this part of the property?
If under Geisel's you're going to rely on a plat to show the existence of an easement, which is required, so if under that case you do that, then the plat is the contemporaneous it's the contemporaneous recorded legal document created at the time that this the lot one, that where the Garzas live, That is a contemporaneous legal document, and it doesn't show any easement on it, which I think supports the inference that they located the subdivision such that it would not be impaired by a transmission line.
What about the title policy that accepted this easement, and apparently a copy was given to your clients when they purchased the property, a copy of the easement as well as the exception in the title policy? What should we do with that?
Yes, Your Honor. That will appear in the history of all properties that are on part of this subdivision because it was part of the parent parcel. So the fact that that is in their history is not dispositive. That's my position.
Are you then asking for damages under 182.017?
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
Is what you're asking for damages under 182.017 sub 5?
What we're asking for is a finding that this easement does not apply on the Garza's property for multiple reasons. And the second reason, which ATC...
Would you finish answering my question? Where in your brief did you do that?
I'm sorry, I've forgotten the question, Your Honor.
My question was, where in your brief do you argue that the flat is defective because it doesn't show this easement in terms that are now claimed? I think that's what Justice is questioning. And I just missed it, so I would like to see it in writing, because if it's not there and it's not briefed either by either party, then we've got a slight problem. It doesn't stop the court necessarily from deciding the issue,
yes,
but it makes it a little harder.
It's on pages 9 to 10, where I cite Geisels and talk about the creation of the plat. The second issue, which I really hope that this court will address, is the applicability of 182.017 sub 7 and its subparts. And here's the reason why it applies here. The Public Service Commission is the entity which controls utility companies. They say what's going to be built, where it's going to be built, how it's going to be built, and they establish the conditions. The existing facility that is near the Garza's property was created pursuant to a decision in 1994. In that decision, in 1994, the Public Service Commission found that they were required to remove wires and structures of all existing 34, 46, 69, and 100 kV lines, and the rights of way of removed lines shall be terminated, forfeiting all rights to the landowners.
But
that
only
includes this transmission line, and logically...
That's only with respect to lines that were retired, isn't that correct?
No, sir, that is not.
Isn't that what the order says?
No, it says removed or taken out of...
Taken out of service.
Taken out of operation. The 46 kV transmission line, there was only... the 34 kV transmission line, and this is the essence of our argument there. There was only one of those, so if that 34 kV transmission line appears in order point 33, and that 34 kV transmission line still exists, still follows the same right of way, then that means that for that one, which still exists, they ordered that the associated right of way be terminated.
Why would the PSC order all easements to be forfeited when they're still going to be placing an electrical transmission line over that easement?
They ordered that in the Public Service Commission decision. The landowners who were being burdened with these new transmission lines were there complaining about old easements. And it is, in fact, common for the Public Service Commission to require that old easements are gone, new easements come in. And, in fact, that, up until this case, was also ATC's position.
Let's talk about the burden a little bit. I think the gist of your argument is this is a more burdensome easement now than it was before, so let's talk about that a little bit. I asked opposing counsel whether one could put a high-voltage transmission line on a wood pole structure. He said yes. Do you disagree?
I disagree in that time frame. If they would have wanted to do that, they would have had to put it on H-poles. I believe if you look at the cases...
H-poles could be made out of wood.
H-poles could be made out of wood, but then you would...
That's a wood pole structure.
Right. but not with this kind of width of a transmission line. You would need a wider transmission line easement because the structures for H poles are, you know, you've got one pole over here, one pole over here, and then you need the buffer to go out from those. You're going to measure the buffer from the outside poles, not from the single pole that's, you know, in the middle.
And would you be able to put two circuits on a wood pole structure in 1969?
In 1969? I don't think so.
Why not?
Because I don't think the technology existed then.
Okay. Is there anything in the record to suggest that?
There's nothing in the record to suggest either way.
Council, the Garzas knew that the steel poles were in use in along Highway 49 adjacent to their property, correct?
Yes.
All right. So their objection is not that there's no question that ATC had the authority to put steel structures in the right-of-way along Highway 49, is that correct?
Yes, they actually got a permit from the Department of Transportation in order to put those structures in the right-of-way of Highway 49, and that permit precludes ATC from cutting trees on adjacent in a property owner's property.
So is it your position that they cannot cut vegetation within the 40 feet to the west of the center line of the transmission line?
Yes, that they cannot come onto the Garza's property because the 1969 easement was extinguished.
Okay, so clearly they must have the right to maintain vegetation along the transmission line, right?
They do have the right to, yes, and there are multiple ways to do that. If you look at the pictures which are in the record, in fact, when WPS was maintaining this transmission line, they allowed trees to grow right within the highway right-of-way. And they never, it is uncontested that the Garza property was never touched until 2011, and ATC was created in 2000.
That's a question of prudence. I'm trying to get to the legal right that ATC has. Where does the right come from for them to maintain vegetation within that 40 feet to the west of the center line? Where does that come from?
They don't have rights on the Garza's property. They have their rights to maintain.
Council, I'm not asking that. I asked whether they had the right to maintain vegetation within 40 feet to the west of the center line, regardless of where that is. Let's say, for the sake, just so we don't get down this rabbit hole, let's say that's not on the Garza property. Where does the authority to maintain the vegetation come from?
That comes from the statute.
Okay. So they have a statutory right to maintain vegetation
in their easement
within 40 feet of the center line.
No. There's no. The easement widths vary. They have a right, and they in fact have an. They have a right to whatever rights they get under an easement. Those are the rights that they have, and they classically and typically take rights to control vegetation because you don't want trees touching the transmission line. It's obviously a problem.
So what I hear you saying is they need to renegotiate a new easement in order to exercise their rights under 182.017 sub 5 for tree trimming.
Yes, and then because those rights are linked to the high voltage transmission line that they got permission to build from the Public Service Commission.
Every time someone subdivides their property, ATC then has to renegotiate an easement with each person who may, at some point in the future, buy one of the parcels of property.
No, Your Honor. No, not if they have valid easement rights. My position is that they don't have valid easement rights. The factual issue goes back to the plat. The legal issue, or one of the legal issues, goes to the Public Service Commission's power and authority to terminate pre-existing easements, which they did for this transmission line, and we know that. That is the only reasonable interpretation of Order Point 33. It's mathematically impossible for ATC's position to be correct. This transmission line easement associated with the wood poles was terminated in 1994 by Order Point 33 when the Public Service Commission decided to terminate those rights. And they have the authority to do that. This is part of 182.017 is part of a network of laws that were created in Chapter 68.
Can you win if we conclude that the 1994 order was not a termination?
Yes, on other theories.
What's your best other theory?
The best other theory is that this is an explicit easement, and it has specific requirements in it. The wood pole limitation was a customized limitation. This was an easement form that was selected by WPS. They could have selected a different kind of easement form. This is a particular form. It's in the record that they selected to use this form. It was WPS that decided that they were going to bind themselves to the limitation to wood pole structures. When Mr. Garza saw this easement, he did what any landowner would do. He looked at it, and it says wood poles. There are wood poles on all of our properties if we've got overhead, any kind of overhead transmission of electricity or distribution of electricity. It's an old easement on wood poles. It did not give him notice. It did not give the Garzas notice that this towering facility that was in the highway right-of-way on steel poles applied to their house. The problem is there's an issue, I think, with what is going to be expected of landowners if they are expected to look at steel poles and look at an easement that calls out wood pole structures in a custom term and say, oh, that's it.
But Council, the easement also provides for and contemplates that the wood poles could be changed, replaced, or removed.
I don't think that it does, Your Honor.
And what does that language mean, then? Does it have any meaning if it doesn't apply to the transmission line and its components itself?
It relates to the appurtenances to the transmission line, and you can change it. You may be able to change it to other wood pole structures. But, you know, there are better wood pole structures today than they used to have.
But I'm looking at the language itself, and it says, together with the right from time to time to enter upon said premises for the purpose of erecting said line and changing, repairing, patrolling, replacing, and removing the same. Are you arguing that the same does not refer back to said line?
Yes, I'm saying that the same goes back to said line, and said line is the specific line on wood pole structures.
So the only change that could be made to the wood poles is to put in wood poles again.
That's the way that WPS wrote it.
You know, Council, we're finally getting to, I think I'm probably not alone on the bench in having expected more discussion or earlier discussion centering around the Court of Appeals holding. And now I see we're finally getting to it, which is fine, which is good. But you used a turn of phrase in response to Justice Rebecca Bradley's first question that caught my attention, and it said, now they have better wood poles than they used to have. And as I was reading the Court of Appeals opinion and preparing for this case in general, the thought occurred, well, I wonder why. I wonder why they didn't just use metal poles in 1969. And I'm speculating, and I think, well, maybe the technology improved, or maybe the economics of the matter got better. Maybe metal or steel was much more expensive in 1969. I mean, certainly a business is going to be looking to try to economize. And so I just wonder if you take the position, and if the Court of Appeals wasn't letting form triumph over substance a little bit by saying, gee, a company like APC involved in this very, very difficult proposition of delivering electricity to literally millions of people is going to be frozen in time forever to the technology of 1969 or whenever. And I wonder, you know, what difference does it make? I think that's a question that leapt to mind. What difference does it make, really, to the signer of an easement allowing, remember, and this was in response to Justice Ann Walsh Bradley's question at the beginning, which is, okay, there was a change in substance. There was a change in substance from wood to metal. What difference does it make because no poles are located on your client's property? That's undisputed. We're talking merely about the maintenance issue. So what difference does it make to your clients what material constitutes the poles?
The engineering limitations associated with wood poles, if they were able to construct two circuits on wood poles, there's still the issue of whether that's two transmission lines instead of a single transmission line. But the facility that is adjacent to their property, and my esteemed colleague here was wrong, it's not a bunch of houses and trees in between them and this facility. At this point, if ATC gets its way, they've already taken out most of three lines of trees, and they're going to take out a bunch more. It's them and a towering transmission line on steel poles next to their property. So the visual blight is going to be significant because those all of their buffer is going to be gone.
But now it seems you're making an argument that is based upon the poles, which are, now it seems to me your argument is based upon the poles, which everyone agrees are not located on your client's property.
Yes. I mean, that is an aspect of the easement that creates blight on their property.
No,
and it's connected, it's linked to their property.
Council, hang on just a second. Let's make sure we've got a proper picture of this in our minds. The poles are not only not on the Garza's property, they're not adjacent to the Garza's property either, correct?
They are adjacent. They're not like multiple properties away. It's the Garza's property, the Highway 49 right-of-way, and the poles are in the Highway 49 right-of-way.
They're in the Highway 49 right-of-way, but if we were to draw lines from the Garza's property directly to the east, would the poles fall within those lines?
From the Garza's property where?
Yes. So you take a line along an east-west line to the north of the Garza property, an east-west line to the south of the Garza property, run it directly east. Are there any poles between that?
Yes, there's a pole outside the Garza property in the State Highway 49 right-of-way.
Okay. And that's the same pole that was there when the Garza's purchased the property?
It is the same pole that was there when the Garza's purchased the property.
Okay. So the effect of this easement is clearing brush away from and trees away from a steel pole as opposed to clearing it away from a wood pole, right?
It's clearing brush or it's cutting trees. It's not clear. It's cutting trees on the Garza's property that have, since they purchased the property, protected them from the noise and commotion of Highway 49 and the blight of the transmission lines.
But that'd be the same whether it's a steel pole or a wood pole.
The blight is worse with the steel poles than the wood poles, but yes, if they have the rights to cut the trees.
I'd like to get into a little more of the guts of the legal reasoning of the Court of Appeals. And that's what attracted my eye to this when they said, Justice Ann Walsh Bradley, I can't remember the word you used, but it was the equivalent of sort of almost in an insouciant fashion, the Court of Appeals said, or an easy fashion, the Court of Appeals said, well, look, the 1969 easement said that it was going to be wood pole structures, and now it's metal pole structures. Therefore, the 1969 easement no longer is operable. And my question, the question that came to my mind is more in the form of an analogy. And the analogy runs as follows, and I think I know your response because now we're getting to it, which I also did not see in your brief, which is the visual blight.
There is additional visual blight, Your Honor.
The visual blight. Okay, so your answer would be the same if I said to you, then this is the analogy that came to my mind when I was preparing for this case. Say we're not talking 69, we're talking 1929. And I don't know if I'm right, but say 1929 they used hand crank telephones where you had to turn the crank in order to generate the call. And you called B down at the telephone operating center and said, get me Sunset 606. And B would plug the, get you to who you wanted to talk with. And the 1929 easement said, in order to facilitate hand crank telephone calls, we will use these transmission lines, and therefore they're allowed to have maintenance 40 feet either direction. Oh, and technology advances, lo and behold, and miraculously people are able to dial their own telephone calls. Would your position be the same here today if instead of saying wood pole structures, the language, the operative language we were talking about was the hand crank telephone calls?
I don't know, Your Honor. If the company that dictates under the under eminent
if it
domain
said power, in that easement, in order to facilitate hand crank telephone calls that are placed from these various residences, and we're not talking power lines, obviously we're talking telephone. Would your position be the same? It's no longer hand crank telephones. Remember, they're dialing themselves from their own home.
I don't know.
Okay.
Thank you very much, Counsel. Rebuttal. I asked you to think about Justice Abrahamson's question that she asked you at the end of your first part of the argument, so if you'd begin with that, that would be good.
This is Justice Kelly's question, and you were about prescriptive rights for vegetation, if I understood the question, and you had three arguments, and he gave us one of
that. Before you begin, do you want to lift the podium up just a little bit so that we can hear you better? Very good. See if that works. Thank you.
Justice Abrahamson, we were talking about three prescriptive rights.
Right.
The first
deals
was
with vegetation.
With vegetation. Right. The first was the stacking argument.
Right, got that.
The second is that prescriptive rights have been found to include vegetation management rights that are reasonably necessary for the adjacent poles. There's case law that says that. So that's a second basis, is that you need to cut the trees, and because of that, you get prescriptive rights to do so. And then the third is, and this would require remand, is what did WPS and then ATC actually do on what is now the Garza's property for a 10-year stretch from 1995 to 2011 when the lawsuit was filed? And that was an issue that was not reached because ATC moved for summary judgment on simpler, less fact-intensive issues. Which raises a question that Justice Bradley asked, Ann Walsh Bradley, about the summary judgment and is the center line in dispute?
Does this go to the plat issue?
A little bit.
Okay.
A little bit. And the answer is no, there's no genuine factual dispute about the location of the center line. If you look at page 62 of our appendix, it's the affidavit of Michael Olson. He's a certified land surveyor. His affidavit in paragraph 10 says, look, I went out on that property, I located the physical monuments, I looked at the meets and bounds description in the easement, I looked at the plan and profile of these lines, and you know what? It matches up. The current center line is on the center line described in the meets and bounds. So there's no genuine dispute of fact about that. Geisel's, the case that Mr. Jablonski talks about, merely says, servient estate by hiring a surveyor can't extinguish an easement. And in that case, what happened is that the survey did not reflect that there was a transmission pole in the middle of the road that the landowner dedicated to the city. And the court held, yeah, the landowner who dedicated it has to pay to have it moved. It didn't extinguish any rights in the utility.
So even if the Garzas had relief coming to them under the statute, 182.017, what would that be?
In this case, there's none, because 182.017 sub 5 says, look, you have to pay damages if you cut trees. But embedded in that statute as part of that is, except by consent of the owner. If you have consent of the owner, there's no damages. And the easement rights granted by the 1969 easement granted those rights to cut trees on the property within the easement area. So we don't have a 182.0175 problem.
But if any
place does the doctrine of latches or estoppel or forfeiture or waiver have in your argument?
It's an interesting question, because the circuit court actually found as an additional reason that the Garza's claim was barred, the statute of limitations applied. Court of Appeals never reached that issue. I think that that does work. We have prescriptive rights. There was a six-year, what they brought is they brought an inverse condemnation claim. There's 6 years to bring that claim. That would have arisen when the steel poles were constructed. It's telling that at that time, WPS thought they had easement rights to build it on steel poles, and the landowner, none of the landowners, from what we can tell, objected. So I would echo Justice Gableman's sentiment that the Court of Appeals decision elevates form over substance. It's contrary to the Atkinson case. Atkinson says, look, easement rights aren't crystallized in time. They change to meet new technologies. It's why we cited in our reply brief.
And while that's true, isn't it also potentially reasonable to read the insertion in the easement wood pole structures as a limitation on the extent of the transmission that could be done along that easement path?
As I said, if you read it as a limitation, I think it's limited to excluding tower structures, something with a larger width or girth.
So when I asked opposing counsel whether you could do a high voltage circuit on a wood pole structure, he said you would need an H structure to do that. Was that correct?
I disagree. Okay. I mean, if you drive down PD, double circuit line, wood poles, the decisions from the PSC that we cited, double circuit, wood poles haven't gotten any better. They're still made from trees, right? they're the same thing then as they are now.
Come on.
I mean, sure, there's new technologies, but see, my light is off, so. You know,
thank you, Chef.
Thank you.
Well, thank you very much for a lively and interesting argument, and thank you also for fine groups that are very helpful to us as we try to sort out the conundrum that you bring to us today to decide. We're going to take a brief adjournment so these students can leave and other students can counsel for the next phase and set up. We are adjourned.